This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to Crit Academy's Unearthed Tips and Tricks. I'm your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Brandon.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next D&D adventure.
Yay.
I am really excited for our monster today, you guys. The Arachthalid.
Yeah.
Arachthalid as in illithid
plus
spider?
Plus spider, yes. Okay. Is that hot or what?
Fuck you. You're mean.
So we're going to start with this. To get the stat block rolling, you want to use the Ice Spider Queen from the Storm King's Thunder campaign. If you don't have it, Google it. You'll find it.
It's everywhere. It's really not hard.
Fuck the slime puppy. Let's go ahead.
We do have to lose some features, though, because she is kind of ice themed. So we're going to get rid of Icy Web, Bite, and Cold Aura. And we're going to give it some new stuff that's going to really make you blow your mind.
Yeah.
Get it? Because it's an illithid. I slay myself. So first, the bite is going to be super important because it's also going to grapple the target, and they must succeed on a 13 intelligence saving throw or be stunned until the grapple ends.
Stunning.
Wah, wah, wah. Now, while you're stunned, you can't break your own grapple.
Nope.
Somebody has to get you out. But it gets worse.
Oh, yeah. Way worse.
They get an ability called Extract Brain. When they use it on an incapacitated grappled target, it deals 4d10 piercing damage. And if it reduces the target to 0 hit points, it's dead.
Yep. Dead.
By brain extraction.
That's right. Dead. D-E-E dead.
Dead. I like it. And of course, we do got to top it off with Mind Blast, right? So the Arachthalid magically emits, you know, the psychic energy, very well known for illithids, in a 60-foot cone, and each creature must succeed a DC 13 intelligence saving throw or take 13 points of psychic damage and is stunned for 1 minute.
Yep.
A creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect. What do you guys think about this?
I think you just gave Brendan nightmares.
Oh, you should see the picture. It's haunting. It is a terrifying little bastard.
Because I saw the picture on Discord.
I like you.
Isn't that awesome?
Yes, it is. It is quite, because I like illithids. In fact, the...
It's basically a head with spider legs.
Yeah.
You guys use something like this in your games? How would you get the most out of it? So CR3, I think. Maybe 4, I don't remember. Not particularly strong.
Yeah. It's amazing how dangerous some lower CR creatures can be.
Yeah, especially when Justin designs them.
I think using this in a place where spiders normally hang out, that's going to get the slip up on adventurers. Because they're going to come and thinking of, oh, we're going to be fighting giant spiders. Now these are spiders. Let's start metagaming. What do they do? Well, they got a poisonous bite, so let's watch out for that.
Exactly.
Look out for that webbing. They come around the corner and they see this fucker looking at them.
And then they release like a psionic attack and leave you stunned.
And then you go, and that's it.
That's funny.
Just shit your pants.
Yeah,
that's like, that's not a spider. And your brain
Dude, it's bringing out his head. Huh. It's fuller than I would have expected. What? His head.
Well, I think would be a good addition to that is a lot like the Intellect Devourer.
Yeah.
Where if it extracts its brain, it can get into the brain cavity and its legs come out the host's back and it becomes a new
I bet they're ridiculous form. That Junctifiers are only CR2, seeing what they do.
Yeah, they're very broken, because they can destroy a party of several levels higher than themselves. Just a failed on their intelligence check. So. And guess what is the most dump stat?
Intelligence.
All right, that'll do it for our monster, the Arachthalid. If you want to know more, you can become a patron and enjoy our beautiful artwork, the monster stat block, the lore, the flavor, all of it. Brandon, would you like to tell us about this weird-ass encounter from Andrew on Discord?
Andrew, yeah, that's what I'm laughing at, the very first two words. Quote-unquote, the explodatorium.
Yeah.
Somewhere you don't want to be without good reason. Its real name is Gnomish in origin, but due to the sound that pervades the area and a good half mile around, at least, that name has been forgotten.
Hey, it goes boom!
Yep.
It serves as a testing ground for various technological advances, but most often the tests are military in nature. Kaboom, that sounds familiar. Day or night.
Gnomes are America.
Or goblins.
Day or night, the people working there have no respect for the eardrums of the other species. The only difference is the night somehow seems to be louder. Oh.
Boom!
They have come up with a few marvels, however. A cannon which fires moonlight that... What? A cannon which fires moonlight that strikes with the force of a few dozen orcs. A little ball you can throw, and it blinds anyone in the area. Oh, that's a flashbang.
Flashbang.
Did you hear that? It's a jutsu.
Oh, no.
That one lit up the night sky like daylight, along with the loud bang that accompanied it.
I
got no sleep that week. They've even started working on making pieces of the weave physical.
Ooh.
To work as energy sources for some of their inventions.
That's cool.
Plus everything's gnome sized. Plus everything's gnome sized. I hit my head all the time. After several years, the local council informed them that they would need to make accommodations for larger folk. They decided that meant explode a big hole in the wall. Gleefully went about their duties.
That's funny.
Most days without injuries and incidents, it's 28.
Not even
that seems that seems high.
There's a local betting pool to guess when the next incident will occur. And
like
another
that.
To guess what the injury will be.
So what do you guys think about this?
It's a Deadpool.
This definitely sounds like something that he thought of while in the shower.
Yep. Seems fun, though.
I like this because this could be something that, I mean, they're not actively trying to hurt people. It's just a side effect of the job, right?
Yep.
And I think that could be interesting, especially if the adventurers are hired to go deal with a noise complaint. excuse me, I've recently inherited this land and I'm having trouble sleeping. So I'm looking for some adventurers to deal with this.
You get there? Yeah, we're not dealing with that. Have a nice night!
I would love to see a D&D variation of OSHA. That would be just fucking great.
I would like you to know that the explosion range of your fireball is not permitted to be larger than 20-foot radius.
I keep picturing, like, a town, too, that has, like, a guild where just everybody's buried in so much legalese. They can't do anything.
And that's why everyone's spell, fireball, is never bigger than 20-foot radius, no matter what level they're at.
That's funny.
Because OSHA doesn't allow it. I love it. All right.
Hold up. Do you have a permit for that fireball? Permit. Yep. Never cast magic. You'd be part of the magic guild here in town.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, that's nice.
You could drop one of the D6s. It's 8D6, right?
And increase the
range. To increase the radius, but it's illegal if you get caught.
I love that.
That's 200 gold per 10 feet radius.
Excuse me, sir. That fireball looked particularly large. How many feet in its radius do you think it would be?
I didn't measure it.
It looked about like 20 to me.
Did you measure it?
All right, that'll Holy do it shit. For our encounter. Thank you very much for the submission, Andrew. If you'd like to join us and submit your own unearthed tips and tricks, please come join our Discord. You can find a link on our YouTube descriptions or on our website.
And our next item, which looks like it also might be from Andrew. We have so many Andrews, hard to keep track of which Andrew's which.
Yeah, right.
But this one is R.I.P. Gilhelm, a.k.a. Eridora Andrew. The Whip of Wild Precision. It requires attunement, and, well, it's a whip. Each time you hit with a whip and don't score a critical hit, your crit range increases by one. That'll add up fast. When you score a critical hit with this weapon outside of your normal crit range, it triggers a wild magic surge.
Oh, no.
And your crit range decreases by two, up to your natural crit range. Anytime you score a crit hit with this whip, you may make one extra attack. What rarity is this again?
The Whip of Wild Precision, huh?
Okay, so...
You crack the whip and it breaks the weave.
It's saying that for every attack you don't crit, instead of being 20, it's got to be 21 on the next?
No.
Or 19.
19.
And then 18. And then 17. But every time it does crit...
Shit's gonna happen.
Every time it does crit, you have to roll on the Wild Magic Surge table.
You crack the whip, you crit... You fireball on yourself.
I think this is very fun.
Yes.
But I don't think it's practical.
But it is fun.
Those usually seem to be on opposite ends of each other. to me, this is interesting because...
I think this is good with the right group.
Yeah. Randomly. Something like this can randomly summon unicorns out of nowhere, force somebody to start talking with bubbles spewing out their mouth. You never know what's going to happen.
Roll for a two, you turn into a pile of petunia plant.
I do think if I was to make one change to this, I would require attunement by a spellcaster.
Yep.
The reason for that is because as soon as a fighter gets a hold of this, they can attack so many times. You're talking every round having a wild magic surge. And I think that could be a problem.
Potentially.
And it doesn't say that your crit range for it gets increased by one. It just says it increases by one. So if you got someone who's dual wielding a sword and this whip and they just keep whacking away until it's like, okay, I'm going to get a crit on a 17 or higher. And then, they're dropping out with the sword.
I would assume they would only work for the whip though. But
but it's not worded in such a way. So I definitely would reword this probably, but I do like it. I like the idea of spawn. I would limit the wild surges to a number of attempts, you know, per minute or something, right?
Yeah.
So, whips have really low crit, though, or low damage at D4, I think.
Let's
say,
unfortunately, nobody takes whips because they suck, so this might be a good way to
Unless you have picked up either our weapon perks or our soon-coming exotic equipment perks, because we make whips badass.
Whip it.
We made a lot of stuff badass in that book.
All right, I think that'll do it for our magic item, the Whip of Wild Precision. Thank you very much, Andrew, for that. A huge shout out to everyone. Digital gift cards are now available at CritAcademy.com. So the perfect gift for the DM or players. You choose the amount and have it emailed right to the recipient. Perfect for holiday.
A gift card for a DM or player is only a click away.
I love that. And it really does make for the perfect gift because we have a lot of best-selling content that just makes everyone's D&D adventure better.
Do that. Don't just buy them something you think they'd like because they'll be like, I don't want weapon perks.
Yeah, maybe they want exotic equipment.
I want the brawler, damn it! What the fuck?
Yeah, I still keep telling people, give me cash for gifts.
Give me
because you always keep buying me stuff I don't want.
That's
why I just give people my Amazon gift wish list.
Yeah. All right, moving on to our Dungeon Master tip, Apex Enemies. Now, there's something that I haven't really done very often, and that's making sure that an area is filled with what should be an apex predator, right? Something in the area that really sets the power level of the setting, right?
Yep.
So if you're in a small village at level one, that apex predator might be a displacer beast, right?
Or a bear.
Or a bear. Meanwhile, when you're in something like Waterdeep, the apex predator might be Xanathar.
Right.
Who runs the mafia there.
I was thinking of a beast for some reason.
He's underneath it, right?
In
Waterdeep. So that sets the tone of the danger level, right? And it kind of sets the... I don't know if you want to use the words power levels, but it gives the characters an understanding and the players of, you know, what the kind of power ceiling is for that area, right?
Yeah.
Because if it's an apex predator, then it's probably the most powerful thing in that area.
Yep.
That's a good point.
This made me think of the meme that pointed out where actual biologists point out the physiology of creatures in D&D. And
why?
There's a point to this. You know how the Trask is a CR3 creature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know how they're covered in spines, right?
I was gonna say, is this a spine thing?
Yeah. But I'll just point out, only prey creatures have spines.
So what the hell's hunting a Trask?
Exactly.
Dragons, probably, right?
But this year is lower than the Trask.
Are they really? Oh, yeah, it's like a 30.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. What hunts the Trask?
The only exception I knew of was...
Gods hunting it for fun.
Gods, Bahamut, Platinum Dragon.
Yeah, maybe. Anyways, it's nice to have give the players a sense of what an Apex level is. The reason for this, because they will see it evolve over the campaign. So let's say when you first start that. Playing, the Displacer Beast is the Apex. This is the strong mother. Yep. And then, you know, you guys hit level 8 and you're fighting 4 of these things at once. It actually gives you a sense of growth.
Where yep. you came from.
And this happens a lot in Dark Souls. Yep. You guys played the Dark Souls games, right?
Fucking yeah.
In Dark Souls, some of the monster bosses just become regular monsters later on.
Yeah.
Which I think is just a great way to show character growth. And I think we That's can really do that cool. in D&D, too.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Man, a few words over there.
And this comes from Jacob Baroque.
Yep.
That's how I seem to pronounce his last name. Actually, so, it is now!
All right. Do you guys have anything you want to add to this, of other benefits to something like this?
If you're in an area you know the Apex Predator happens to be a red dragon, you shouldn't expect it to be anything other than... anything larger Death. Than a red dragon in that specific area.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was kind of touching on, right?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And once again, the goal is to show the growth, right? And the power balance that exists in the region. So however big that region is, you know, you mentioned the red dragon. Well, if, you know, what is the one from Hobbit?
Smaug?
Smaug, right? He's this big, giant, terrifying monster that sets the... That sets the
tone
for what is terrifying in the area.
If you really want to be terrifying, you read the Silmarillion, you realize, oh, Smaug was one of the weaker ones.
Didn't by, know that.
By a huge mile.
So where the hell are all the other ones?
Dead.
Oh.
And then when he finally does die, there's new predators that come along. They're the other races.
Because they're not scared of him no more.
Yeah.
You see that in the anime slime. How I Got Reincarnated as Slime.
I need to watch. That looks
good. It was a fun series.
Yeah. Oh, it was really good. When Tempest disappeared, or what's his name? Something Tempest. I can't remember. One of the big dragon threats disappears,
yep.
And now the area that he was keeping, his energy was keeping away the predators, they all start to filter in. So, anyways, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude. Of course you can't. You're going to... I'm kidding. You can avoid dickitude by enhancing your tieflings a little bit. You know they're half-bloods?
Yes.
Yeah. So are half-elves.
We've talked about that before. So, apparently, this was submitted by somebody on the Discord, and I couldn't find it.
Ooh.
So, if you're on our Discord, and this came from you, please let me know, because I could not find the original name.
On the blog of Andrew.
You got a bunch of Spartacus.
Oh, is it Andrew? Oh, you know what? You're right. Another one from Andrew, because I told him I was going to do a bunch. Anyways,
yeah.
So apparently tieflings and their demonic appearance are derived originally from human bloodlines, but they've also been described as a mix of humanoids and something else. So that description implies that it's not just humans, but humanoid creatures.
Not just humans.
Right? So Will O'Connor, the artist that is responsible for designing the tieflings, highlighted that he wanted them to look like a cursed people. Not cursed humans.
Yep.
Cursed people. Their infernal heritage catches this very well. But humans aren't the only race that can intermingle with creatures of the Nine Hells.
Yep.
This means that you could have a gnome-based tiefling.
What the fuck?
Right?
Yep.
Imagine how adorable that would be. Perhaps you decide that you're going to have a tabaxi tiefling. Or an orc tiefling. In any case, this mixture of infernal bloodlines will allow you to play around with the physical appearance of your characters as a tiefling race?
I'm pretty sure one of the boss creatures we fought in my 1/4 edition campaign I was in was basically tiefling, but the other half was dragonborn.
That's awesome. It's like a dragonborn tiefling.
He looks like a straight-up demon.
Dragonbornling.
Yeah.
A tiefbornling.
A demonic dragon. That was awesome.
Either way, that's something that we as players can do because it's only flavor, right?
Yep.
You're not changing any mechanics, just their lineage or race or whatever they're calling it now, right? What do you guys think about this?
Why not?
I want to see a gnome tiefling.
You want to see a gnome tiefling?
I do.
I think it'd be funny to see an Eric Holker tiefling.
An Eric Holker tiefling?
Well, then you just pick the tiefling, flying tiefling variant.
Yeah.
But instead of looking humanoid, you'd look like Eric Okra with, like, demon horns and stuff. And a big crackly tail. It's a rudder.
What are some I think people would really confuse you for an actual monster.
Well, they do that with tieflings already, so.
Yeah.
They have ginormous horns and tails. It's terrifying. And if your NPCs aren't reacting to these common villagers aren't reacting to tieflings, they should be, because they are an extremely uncommon race.
They should be, anyway.
Well, it says it in the player's handbook.
I know. I thought they should be, anyway.
So, NPCs should be reacting. But anyways, we're talking about the mixing of these, and I think this could add a lot of fun to your game, so please consider it. The idea of having a Goliath tiefling, like, this thing is just a tower mountain.
It came straight from the North Circle of Hell!
All right.
Oh, you guys, I'm over here for lunch.
You guys want to add anything else to this?
Nah.
All right. That'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by having half-blood tieflings.
Yay. Half-breed.
All right. If you enjoy the show and you'd like to support us, head on over to CritAcademy.com. Pick up some of our best-selling content. Support us by sharing our content. Follow us on social media. Please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/CritAcademy. We give all kinds of fun rewards and loot to our patrons, so please consider checking it out. That'll do it for our show today. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Brandon. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.